Should I give you a hard time about your name in this episode?
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Submitted for your approval, there is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. There is also, it turns out, a 500th podcast about the Twilight Zone. Those episodes range in quality, as vast as space, and as entertaining as infinity. This one is the middle ground, between light and shadow, between science and superstition, between a podcast worth your time and a giant piece of crap. Join, if you will, Rish Outfield and his niece Cathexis as they travel into the Twilight Grove.
Good evening. Welcome to another episode of the Twilight Groan podcast. My name is Rish Outfield.
And I am Cathexis.
We're going to be talking about the season one episode Mirror Image today, written by Rod Serling, first aired February 1960. And as usual, we'll have Cathexis tell us what she remembers of the episode.
All right, here we go. The episode starts out at a bus station. There's a very beautiful white woman who looks like every other white woman in that era of television and movies. There is a... just like a bus teller there, an older, angry gentleman. It starts out, everything's normal, you know. She's waiting for the bus. She goes up and asks this angry older gentleman, "When will the bus to Cortland be here?" And that's when he starts saying things like, "Why do you keep asking me that? You asked me that 10 minutes ago. You asked me that 15 minutes ago. You asked me that a half an hour ago." And she's very confused because she, in fact, did not do that. She just keeps saying, you know, "I never asked you this. This is the first time I've talked to you." And he's very adamant that that is not the truth. He's very, very annoyed with her as well. After that... what happens after that?
Well, she notices the bag.
Ah, yes. Okay. So she has a piece of luggage with her, and she had left it right by her seat, her bench that she was sitting at, to go and unknowingly bother this man once more. She goes back to her seat, looks, and the bag is in fact not there. She's very confused, and she looks and she sees that her bag is actually behind the counter of the check-in luggage area, and once again this man is very upset and says, "You put it there. You checked your bag in not too long ago. Why do you keep bothering me? Why don't you just go sit down over there, take some deep breaths through your nose, and calm down?" So she's very offended, rightfully so, because she has no recollection of any of this. It's the first time she's ever met this man. She has no idea what this man is talking about. All she knows is that this man is very rude. So she says something like, "Either you need to get your eyes checked," or she implied that, you know, this guy had no idea what he was talking about. And so she turns back around, very confused, and it pans to the ladies' sign at the restroom. So she goes into the ladies' room. You know, she's washing her face with cold water, trying to reassess herself, figure out what's going on. She's very confused, and there is another woman beside her, looking at her very concerned-like, and she is a...
Cleaning lady,
maintenance lady. So she's in there, she has her bucket, she's cleaning, and she looks at our main character, her name is Millicent, also. And she says, "Are you okay, ma'am?" And Millicent says, "Yes, I'm fine." And the worker says, "It's just that you've been in here so many times already." And Millicent says, "What? No, I have not." And is very upset about it because, "No, you must have mistaken me for someone else. You must be confused. You must have seen someone that looks like me. I have not been in here. Not once." So she's very adamant about this. She says, "I've not been in this restroom. What are you talking about? I'm so confused. What's the matter with you people? Why do you keep accusing me of things?" And so the woman goes and she's trying to calm her down. She's obviously a little frightened because you know, she's seen her in there before, she says. So she gets her cold wash rag, tries to offer it to her, and Millicent is peering out the door, very confused. She looks out the door, and she sees herself sitting in the bench that she was sitting in before. So she slams the door, very freaked out, and the woman is you know, saying, like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's going on? And what does she say? She just kind of is very out of it at this point, just very disheveled, confused, doesn't know what's going on. And so she goes out of the bathroom. She goes over to this older couple who is resting. The husband is sleeping, and the wife has her eyes closed, and they're on a bench. So she goes up to them and says, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you, but did you see someone sitting in my seat just now? And the woman said, no, but I wasn't paying attention very hard. And the man, like, snorts awake and says, what's the problem? And she says, oh, there's no problem. I just thought I saw someone I knew. And so after that, she goes back to her seat, and yeah, right? Then the gentleman arrives. He's soaking wet. He's in a raincoat. He's just come from outside, and he sits right by her. And he says something like, oh, the bus is late, isn't it? And she says, yeah, it's a half hour late. And he notices that she's looking frightened and confused, and so he says, are you ill? Are you sick? Or something like that. And she says, I don't know what's wrong with me. And he kind of presses her and says, well, why don't you tell me what's going on? And she says, well, I've been seeing things. But if I told you, I'm worried you would call the police or move to another seat or call an ambulance. And he convinces her to tell him what she's been seeing. And she tells him, all of these people are telling me that I've been places and done things that I haven't. And my bag keeps disappearing and reappearing. And they say that I checked it, but I haven't. And she looks, and her bag is there. It's not in the check-in section anymore. Her bag is back again. So now she's even more confused, telling this guy what's going on. She says, and when I went to the bathroom and I looked out, I saw myself. And he's trying to rationalize and saying, oh, that's very strange, but maybe there's someone who looks very similar to you here. Maybe it's someone playing a joke. And she says, that's too fantastic of an idea. Or something like that. So he's just trying to get her to come to a sane conclusion, I guess, because she's freaking out about it and saying things that are very confusing to him. But for some reason, he stays there and just continues to press her to tell him what's going on. So she's telling him all these things, and he's trying to get her to come up with a sane answer, and you hear the bus finally arrive, and the teller announces it, and they're getting ready to go, and he takes her bag for her, and he's being very, very gentlemanlike, and they go to the bus, and they're boarding, and he's ready, getting ready to go on with her luggage and help her on the bus, and she sees something and runs away, and we don't see immediately, but the camera pans back to the bus, and it's her sitting in the window seat. So she sees herself sitting in the window seat just staring. So she runs, and I guess she faints. It's like in the, what's it called? The mannequin one?
After Hours.
It's like After Hours, where she just randomly faints, I guess. So she's unconscious, and this random stranger that sat by her is taking care of her, and he's sitting by her and watching after her, and the janitor lady comes up to him and says, I think she has something wrong mentally or something like that, just hints that she is crazy and that she needs help and that she could tell that she was not right. And then the teller says things that are similar, like, I think she has a leak in her attic, yes. So this guy continues to take care of her until she wakes up, and she wakes up and she says, I've been remembering something. Something that I read a long time ago, or I saw, and she says, it's about parallel universes. There's one of me, and then there's another one in the other parallel, and sometimes, inexplicably, the two can join for some reason. And the only way that they can survive is by taking over one's life. So she's dead set on this. She's saying that this doppelganger that she has is trying to ruin her life and take it all over and drive her crazy and make her look insane so that this other her can have her life. And of course the guy is just looking at her like, all right, let's forget about that. Let's not think about that quite yet. There's a rational explanation. Let's not resort to that. But she just won't stop. And then she does this thing where she just stares and is very unresponsive for a very long time. So he gets up and he says, I'm going to call my friend that's nearby, and maybe he can give us a lift to Syracuse? Is that where it was? Wherever they were going. He said, maybe he can give us a ride so that we don't have to wait for the bus because it's not coming for a long time. And he goes up to the teller, and that's when the teller says, you know, she gave me bad feelings. She's very creepy. And the teller says, aren't you going to call your friend? And this guy says, I don't have any friends nearby. I was hoping that that would get her to go with help. And so the teller gives him the phone and he calls the police. All without her knowing. She doesn't know what's going on. And then she goes into the bathroom and it's dark and she starts saying, where are you? Just over and over again and yelling. And she turns on the light and is looking for this other her, and he knocks on the door and he says, are you okay? And she says, yes, and she comes out and he says, why don't we go get some fresh air? So he grabs her stuff, they go outside, and she's getting fresh air, and then in a matter of blink of an eye, she's thrown into the back of a police car, and she's gone. And this stranger is left, you know, he looks very guilty and sad, but he thinks this is what's best for her because he thinks that she's clinically insane. So he goes back and the teller says, why don't you get some rest? You have about 4 hours, I think he says, before the next bus comes. So why don't you get some rest on that bench? And he says, it's like a tomb in here. It's so quiet. You'll be able to get rest. And so this stranger agrees and he puts his stuff down and he puts his suitcase down right next to the bench. And he goes and he gets a drink of water and he looks up. And his suitcase is gone. And so he's very confused, obviously, because it was just there. He just walked a few feet to get a drink. And just out of the corner of his eye, he sees a man run out the door. And so he chases after him, and so he says, wait, come back, come back. And this man turns around, and it's him. And he does not catch up with him. He gets away. So the stranger in the universe that we're talking about just kind of stands there very confused, and that's how it ends.
Okay, that was a very lengthy,
I know, I'm sorry,
explanation. I feel like you probably could have told that in a minute because I didn't think very much happened in
this episode. It didn't really.
Yeah, now I'm rethinking. It's like, why did I pick this episode? Any idea why I picked this episode?
Not really. I don't know, honestly. No. Why?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. So Millicent Barnes is played by Vera Miles, and she was actually a fairly big movie star at this time. She was in The Searchers, a John Wayne movie from 1956 that John Ford did.
That's,
everybody says is the best of the John Wayne westerns. Alfred Hitchcock around this time had lost Grace Kelly, his favorite.
Okay.
His blonde bombshell that he wanted to be in all of his movies, and she had chosen to go be a princess of Monaco instead of be an actress. And so he was obsessed with finding a blonde that was like Grace Kelly, and Vera Miles was one of those blondes that he pegged.
Yeah, that's why I said
that. He cast her in the very first episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which would have been about 2 years before this. And then the year before, he cast her with Henry Fonda in The Wrong Man, which is a movie he did in 59. And then in 1960, he cast her in Psycho. She plays Janet Leigh's sister, the one that doesn't get killed in Psycho. And then she said the wrong thing to Mr. Hitchcock, who was very, very sensitive. And
he decided
that she wasn't the next Grace Kelly. And he found himself a Tippi Hedren, he moved on. And she never really had that fame that she was expected to. I mean, she did two films for Hitchcock, including his most famous film, and so I guess that's pretty good. But you never know. Hitchcock wanted to just make movies for the rest of his life with Grace Kelly, and he was always trying to woo her back from Monaco, and she had talked about maybe coming back to movies, but it never happened.
Yeah.
Anyhow, sorry, that was a sidetrack, but you know, she was a fairly big star for this episode, and I thought she was fine.
Yeah.
She wasn't like hysterical like some of them that we've seen in other episodes where you're just like, oh boy, that's way too big.
Yeah.
But she was just angry like from the very beginning, and I never really felt sorry for her.
Mm-mm.
But I honestly, I think it's just the script's fault that this, so little happens in this episode. And then so much is just left to your imagination to figure out, well, what was going on? I don't know. I guess there was a second dimension that opened up and, you know, a double came through and stole her life. There's one shot that was kind of cool where the camera pans and it shows Millicent Barnes in the bus, and she's kind of got like this sinister look
creepy
on her face.
Yeah, that
and
was
I liked
cool.
that, but we didn't get anything sinister from her through the rest.
No.
And I would have liked it better if there had been something actively going on with the other one, like purposely bothering her, purposely doing, you know, trying to get her bag and stuff like that. The guy you referred to as the stranger. Yeah, obviously his double steals his bag, and there's a shot where he's running after the double.
Yeah.
And it worked really, really well.
It did,
It was a cool optical shot where there's one of him in the foreground and then the other in the background trying to catch up. And that one seems clearly to be having fun or there's something malevolent going on.
Yeah.
But there needed to be more of that.
I agree.
In this episode, ultimately, it's just like almost nothing happens.
Yeah, it's just like...
And I feel like...
There's no point.
Well, I feel like it wasn't a very good episode. It's the first one that we've watched together where I was just like, oh, well, that one wasn't all that special. But the teller, the old man that you said was rude to her, he really reminded me of my grandfather. That's how my grandfather talked to people.
He reminded me of Papa a little bit.
Okay, of my dad, yeah.
Just grumpy.
Yeah, he's just at one point he's just like, why don't you go away and let me read my magazine?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Serling had gone on a trip the year before this aired, and he saw somebody with the same bag as him. And from behind, he said, that could be me. And he said he never saw the guy's face, but he just couldn't let that idea go of what if it was him. And that's a great idea. I really like the whole idea of what I thought they were touching on was that idea of everybody in the world has a double somewhere. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's not true, but it's a cool idea that everybody has an identical twin somewhere in the world. And I thought that's where they were going with this. But ultimately, I feel like there was something more malevolent going on.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of left to your imagination, and I don't think that's handled.
And sometimes that's, I mean, in this case, no, it just wasn't fun enough. Like, it was just no purpose. Like, why? It's just, I like that idea, though. That scares me. The whole doppelganger thing is really creepy to me. So it could have been so good. But it just lacked. I don't know.
So you still don't know why I wanted to bring it to make you watch it?
No.
Okay, well, Jordan Peele is running the new Twilight Zone for CBS All Access. And he made a movie just last year called Us. And he said that when he was a kid, he saw an episode of the Twilight Zone called Mirror Image. And it inspired him to write Us.
That's really cool.
And you can see, I mean, you've seen Us.
I have.
And if the listener hasn't, you know, you probably ought to see it before I say what I'm about to say. But it sort of takes this idea more in the direction that you and I wanted this episode to go.
Oh, yeah.
Of somebody that looks exactly like you but is not you taking over.
Yeah.
Replacing you.
That's so cool.
And the trailer for us didn't give very much away, except for there's a family and they're on vacation. We get to know them in this trailer. And then you see that they run into people that seem to be like dark versions of themselves.
Yeah.
And at the end of the trailer, I think the dad says to the boy who saw them, and he's like, "Who was it?" And he says, "Us.
It was us.
And that's all I saw. If there was a second trailer, I didn't see it. But I went to see the movie based on just...
Yeah.
Well, based on Get Out.
Yeah.
Get Out was so good that it was just like, yeah, Jordan Peele, I'll go see whatever you make next. And there were some really, really scary moments in
Us. It scared the crap out of me.
Just the idea and the doppelgangers in that, there was something wrong with all of them. They were defective, or they were crazy, or evil versions.
Something was missing. Kind of thing.
And that's just awesome. I really liked how they'd have each actor portray the regular version.
And it was then so good, yeah.
They portrayed the evil version of themselves. And I'm going to slaughter her name, unfortunately, but Lupita
Nyong'o,
who plays the mom, she even looked different with her version.
Oh, yeah.
She did this thing with her eyes
and
this noise that she made and way of talking, where it was just so clearly a different person.
Yep.
And I thought that was really, really interesting. It was a really good movie. Unfortunately, when they explained what was going on at the end of the movie, they lost me. And some people were just fine with it. And I wish that I had been, because I would have liked the movie more. But when they explained what was going on, I couldn't follow them.
Yeah.
I was like, nope, sorry, guys. It needed maybe a tiny bit more of this.
Yeah,
where
imagination.
You just go, I don't know where they came
Definitely.
From or why they're there, except for they were bad and they each wanted to eliminate
the
other. There's also one other really neat twist in Us that I won't spoil. But I feel like the movie would have been fine without the explanation of where the others came from. But I think we would have been robbed of that twist that comes at the very end. You needed to be able to see what had happened all those years ago and what was going on with these beings, these people. But boy, it would take me a half an hour to explain to you what I think was going on with the doubles and their lives and their, it was just so convoluted, and I was just like, wait, how could that be? Do you remember there was the boy, the little boy, and his double was like super broken and defective?
Oh yeah, like an animal.
And oh my gosh, he was scary too.
Yeah.
Really, really cool movie. They go over to the neighbors, remember? And
that was horrible. Oh my gosh.
And the neighbors have like twin daughters.
Yeah.
And the twin daughters, of course, have twins as well.
So awful.
Oh. Sorry, I guess I'm talking about something else.
No, it's very
But that's
relevant.
Why I wanted us to watch this, is because I haven't seen... I probably saw this about 15 years ago. I've told you in an earlier episode that I went to this Twilight Zone convention in Los Angeles, and there were some people from, I think, CBS Video that were there, and they were talking about, you know, we're going to put them all out on DVD and whole sets, and I was super excited about when that happened. I was going to buy them, and I did buy, I think, the first and second season's worth, and I watched them when they first came out. But I wanted to revisit this knowing what Jordan Peele did.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
In Us. Just to see if there were little parallels, we'd be like, oh, that's from that. And there weren't.
No.
I said that there was a shot that I really liked. While there was, it wasn't the shot where Vera Miles' double is all scary looking.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I wish they just picked up on that.
I wish
they had shown that she... saw like the hysterics that the other one was in, and that delighted her. Or
yeah, like a
like
smile,
that.
Like just creepy. Yeah.
But anyhow, the shot that I like is preceded by a shot that I hated. when the stranger sets down his bag, we get this terrible insert on the bag that they did in post, and you can tell because the resolution goes all terrible mm-hmm. on this zoom in. And it's one of those audiences are too dumb to look at the bag.
Yeah.
So we need a close-up. But we didn't shoot a close-up. And I hated that. It sucked.
Yeah.
But the shot after that, the guy sets down his bag and then he walks to the foreground and drinks from the drinking fountain. And as his head goes down to drink in the drinking fountain, the bag disappears. And when he raises up, it's yeah. gone. And I really liked that shot because, I mean, all they did was they had a string on yeah, it and they pulled it away.
I liked that.
But it was subtle. If we hadn't had that terrible... And you remember in The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, there was a shot like that with the hammer, whereas there was a zoom in on the hammer because it's super important that you see the hammer.
I mentioned that, yeah.
But it hit us over the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
It was way better than this
shot. Yeah, but it was still...
But it was still unnecessary, and I just...
It's just so random, you know, it's in your head the whole time. So it's not like a subtle, oh, I remember that. It's like, oh, what's going to happen with that? So yeah, that makes sense. A little too aggressive with that.
I don't know. These are just personal choices that filmmakers have to make. And sometimes they are worried that people won't get it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes they're right. Sometimes there will be movies where you're just like, I didn't get that that's what was going on. I wish there had been a line.
Yeah.
Did you see The Rise of Skywalker?
No.
It came out like 30 seconds ago, so you would remember
no,
what it was.
I did not.
Okay, well, I won't mention that. But I was just trying to think of a scene recently where in a movie where they felt like they had to do that.
It happened
because
a lot.
We're not paying attention. Because everybody watches movies on their phones or whatever.
I don't know.
I just saw Midsommar, if you say it that way, or I always heard people call it Midsommar, but then I saw the director being interviewed and he said Midsommar, and I was like, oh. But there was a moment there where they show there's like a mural on the wall of
indeed
this, let's say, spell magic thing, and the camera just stops and shows it to you.
Oh, the drawings?
Yeah.
Yes, yep.
And I thought that was really interesting.
Yep.
Because later on, what is depicted in the mural ends up happening.
Yeah.
And I didn't... I was following it because the camera stopped.
Yeah, it completely
long enough
stopped.
That
yeah.
it's like, guys, this is important. Look at this. But there was still a line in there of a character saying, well, this is strange. This just happened. And I was just like, oh, you didn't need that line. We saw it. We paid attention.
Yeah.
But I wonder if people do pay attention. Far more people see movies on TV or on their phones or on anything else streaming now than ever see movies in the theater. But if you go to a theater where there's no distractions, you focus on these things and you tend to follow. Oh, was it you? There was somebody I was talking to about the difference between Inception and Interstellar. Oh, was it at Christmas I was talking to Matthew about it.
Mm.
Whereas I feel like with Inception, they really, really explained early, early on what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like they bring Ken Watanabe on board and he's just like, I want to know how this works. And they're like, okay, here's the deal. And then they bring in Ellen Page.
Ellen Page, yeah.
And they say, okay, we want you to pay attention to this because it's going to be important. So they set all that up. And then later, they don't say anything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe they still do. Maybe they say, you know, we've still got X number of minutes, even though to them it's happening instantaneously or whatever.
Yeah.
But they required the audience to focus, but I felt like they set it up enough that you shouldn't be too confused. And I know some people are still confused. But in Interstellar, there were moments where I was just like, I know that I should understand what is happening, but I don't. And I feel really, really dumb about it. And I did end up seeing Interstellar a second time because I was just like, I don't like feeling dumb. I'm going to go a second time knowing what's going to happen. And I'll enjoy it. And I enjoyed it less the second
time.
Because I was like, no, guys, this does not make sense. How could this be? Anyhow, sorry, I just...
No, that makes sense.
The shot of the suitcase was not necessary.
No, yeah, it was not.
But also back in those days, I mean, we're watching it in high resolution in the 21st mm-hmm. century. In those days, a TV screen was 10 inches wide and all that. And so maybe they felt like, you know, people wouldn't even see
that's fair.
The
that's true.
Suitcase
yeah.
unless they did a zoom in on it. Anyway, sorry, I think this episode has gone too long for what was going on it. What did you think of the episode?
I thought it lacked climax. Like it didn't. Yeah, it didn't impress me much. It was very mellow, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't surprised. Just kind of sad.
There was a surprising moment. The police show up,
oh my gosh,
and without
so
a word,
stupid.
They grab this girl and put her in the back seat, struggling, and drive away. They don't say thanks, sir, or is this the
nothing.
Woman, or we got your call, and it's just, okay, you know,
nope.
We'll take care of her. Nothing. They don't say a word. They
nope.
just drive away.
Just shove her in the back seat and go. Yeah, that was weird.
I don't get that.
I don't either.
You can't say that it was because of time. They felt like they, you know, oh, we because there's so much time wasted early
yeah.
on of just looking and thinking and wondering and.
Yeah, I don't know. That was very strange, though.
Yeah, I would enjoy a remake of this episode.
Yeah.
But just with it, the danger ratcheted way, way up. And I don't know. Like the bag is what they seem to be after, but why?
Yeah, what?
If it's like your passport, they're in a foreign country and they're waiting for an airplane to go back home and they encounter these doubles and somebody keeps trying to take their passport and their ticket or whatever.
That makes
sense.
Because
they're
yeah.
trying to take their place back home or whatever. I think I could get behind that a lot more. But I don't know. You know, it's 60 years ago. It made a big enough impression on Jordan Peele
yeah.
That I shouldn't question. You have anything else you need to say?
I do not. Thank you.
Well, thank you again for sitting down and watching one of these with me and talking about it excessively. And hopefully we will be back soon with another episode of The Twilight Groan. I have been Rish Outfield.
And I have been, as always, Cathexis.
Good night.
The Twilight Groan is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. That means you're free to share the file, to download it, to save it, to listen to it, to delete it and forget about it, but you cannot take credit for it, change the file, or try to sell it. That's fair, isn't it? In any genre.
Coming up next, Season 3's Itch a Good Life.